Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
One day I'll get tired of that intro. Even though Bob Miller has a statue now, we're going to keep that, I think, as long as this exists. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Jewelcast. It is January 22nd. We are 4 minutes after 6:30, but we have a lot of time left, so we're going to keep pressing on. Today we have at least 3 guests, maybe 4 guests, so... we're going to just talk for a while, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a little more fun than it could have been, because instead of being on a 7-game losing streak, the Kings are on a 1-game winning streak, and obviously that means all of our problems are solved. So let's go ahead and go live. First off, I believe we have Sarah on. Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I sure am.
Okay, great. I think we've got Robin as well. Robin?
Hello.
Hey. And lastly, I believe that is James. James?
Yeah, hey, what's up? Hey, did you see the slow motion train wreck that was the Patriots game the other day?
Are we going to talk about football? I mean, we can talk about football. I'm just, of all the upsetting sports things to talk about. Well, it gets us in an appropriate mindset, I think.
Tom Brady is so good, he lets his opponents have a head start just to see how much he can come back. Tom Brady is so good that he just wants to see how many trick plays he could do just to make it interesting. That's all. All right, that's it.
Look, my favorite college player of all time made the play of the season in the AFC Championship by ripping a ball out of somebody's hands, and then it didn't matter at all. So shout out to Miles Jack. You're doing great. It's not your fault. So let's go ahead and dive into some King stuff. Going to go, I'm sure, another hour or so, and we've got a lot to talk about. This time we're actually only 2 weeks from our last episode, which for us is a short layoff and one that I'm hoping we're able to keep consistent. The problem was that with only 2 weeks of material, we were not even going to be able to talk about a win until yesterday when finally things went right, at least in the power play. And even though, some people out east would have you believe it was all the refs, the Kings managed to win a game by themselves, and it was very exciting. So let's go ahead and kind of go around the horn just with some observations, not only from yesterday, but maybe from the last week. And we'll start with Robin, because Robin, you were not on the last episode, so I'm curious for your thoughts. What did you think of the performance yesterday? Was it, sort of the Kings just getting fortunate that they got some power play contributions, or do you think that you saw some better things from them than from the last couple weeks?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, the thing about their power play is that it makes me want to weep and die. And I'm sure I'm not...
Good start.
So there was no weeping and no wanting to die yesterday, which is, always a positive. But the thing I noticed, at least about their power play, is that it's movement. a lot of times what happens is they kind of get stuck in a rut, so they just kind of pass it all around the perimeter. I'm like, guys, no. You need to get to the middle a little more. That's where the goalie is, please. In terms of, you know, power play, that was good. But in terms of defense, it was back to basics. So kind of reminded me a lot of what we've seen previously with the Kings when they, under Daryl Sutter, when they were on their horrible extended losing streaks. It's regain your focus. Let's start one step at a time. First step was to stop giving up four goals. So fortunately, they only gave up two yesterday.
Progress. James, let's talk about personnel real quick. So yesterday we got to see continued presence of, among other things, we kept getting, power play time from some guys who haven't always seen power play time before. And one, of course, in particular that we got was Mike Amadio, who we haven't seen because he hasn't been here. And he managed to bring a goal and an assist to the power play. And more importantly, really showed off the quick release that we want to see from guys when they're in the middle of the ice. Do you think that he was sort of right place, right time on that goal? Do you think he brought something new to the power play? What were your impressions?
Well, Mike Amadio is making he's made an immediate impact, and it's great to see. The man who has scored 50 OHL goals in his career is finally getting a shot with the big team, and he's making the most of it. And he's doing it even quicker than Alex Iafallo has done. You know, whereas Iafallo, you know, he's known for his catalyst role and continuing the pressure. You know, Amadio, he's shown that he can be an assassin. And he gets the credit for being in the right place at the right time to get that nice backhand pass from the corner by Alec Martinez for that second goal. So, you know, Amadio, he's played some sustained power play time, and look for the Kings to continue to use him in that role.
Yeah, and we harped on Martinez a little bit last podcast, both with he and Muzzin having turned things around from last season. Martinez was still struggling in a few areas and maybe not driving possession the way he was, but he certainly showed up on a power play yesterday. Sarah, thoughts on sort of the defense continuing to shoot on the power play? It worked better yesterday in terms of creating rebounds and in at least one case going directly into the net. Are you encouraged by the way that paid off yesterday? Is it still a strategy that you want to see?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to see them keep at it. They in the game yesterday, you know, they had a lot of traffic in front of the net, which is not something that we saw too much of during all those really awful games that we all had to sit through and watch them lose. And so, like, the goal that Tanner Pearson got where he just sort of shoveled it in at the last second, you know, if he wasn't there, if he wasn't crowding Henrik Lundqvist, you know, that goal probably wouldn't have gone in. I think the make the defenseman shoot from behind works as long as they don't let up on, you know, getting to those ugly areas in front of the net. As long as they kind of stay on that part of their game, maybe the power play will do more good things instead of also make us really frustrated. So hopefully that's a sign of good things to come. The fact that they got it to work three times was really encouraging. I don't know off the top of my head what the Rangers' penalty kill looks like, but maybe it's okay. We'll see. I mean, fortunately, Vancouver's coming up next, so there's a place to experiment and see what happens. I'm just going to take a guess that Vancouver's stats in anything are not pretty.
Well, you were right on, at least for the Rangers, in that they aren't particularly standing out in one direction or the other. They are 12th in the league on the PK. So, you know, not too shabby, at least from the perspective that the Kings weren't taking advantage of, like, an Oilers caliber penalty kill. which is good. The the shots, at least yesterday, they took seven shots that weren't blocked on the power play. And four of them were from basically the blue line. And three of them, or one of them was Gabrick from the top of a circle, and then the two goals from Amadio and Pearson. So maybe they weren't getting a ton of looks, but that's because when they were getting good looks, they were just finishing off the power play. So other observations, at least let's talk a little bit about the start and about the Kings getting down early, because that, I think, more than anything, has been what we've come to expect over the last few weeks, and it's the biggest holdover from last season, where I think the Kings were bottom five in giving up the first goal, and this year they are, I believe, tied for last in the league in terms of the number of times they've given up the first goal. So we'll jump back to Robin. That, if it's something that hasn't changed from Sutter to Stevens, are you, you know, putting this on anyone in particular, or do you think, like yesterday's where it was sort of a bad bounce off the stick, they're just not getting rewarded for however they're coming out the gate?
Okay. So at least from what I've noticed and from the – I started tracking them a little bit after their bye week, and I've noticed that they just kind of come out really ho-hum. So I don't know if anybody saw the black and white or something. The Kings had this little video, and they were talking about Justin Brown's 1,000 games, and Luke Robitaille mentioned that. You kind of get stuck in your head. So I think it is partly a Stevens thing. Like, I know he's a different coach than Daryl Sutter under, you know, Sutter's tutelage for 4 years, right? So, I mean, I think part of it is Stevens, but I think part of it is also just to kind of get used to it. It's like, oh, great, here we go again. All right, let's start over, start from the bottom.
Yeah, it's certainly frustrating because this is you look at the Kings, how they are positioned in a lot of areas. There was a chart I saw today of amount of time leading versus amount of time trailing, and the Kings are, I think, sixth to last or something in the percentage of time they've spent leading games. And the bottom, I think, 14 or 13 teams in that metric are all out of the playoffs. Like, of the top 18, that's your playoff teams at the moment. So the Kings have been sort of bucking that trend. In that, they've been bucking the trend in terms of their goal differential, which is so much stronger in the third period, and they're the only team with that, with a really, you know, a really positive goal differential that's on the outside looking in. James, are you pinning this on anything in particular? Do you sort of agree with Robin that there's just not enough drive in the first period?
I think there's something a little lacking from an organizational perspective that they have not replaced since, you know, the departure of really tough, gritty guys like, you know, the Regaers, the Justin Williams and Matt Green and Mike Richards. You know, these are guys that will, you know, literally cut your finger off, you know, if they need to win the game. And, you know, ever since the departure of those tough, gritty guys, you know, the organization hasn't quite been the same. I mean, if you look at Kopitar, I mean, you know, he's a Mediterranean guy. You know, he seems like a chill guy, you know, and he's shown that he's not the type of guy that's going to, you know, lead by agitation, you know. And he seems like a guy who's, you know, quietly willing to produce and produce a lot, but he's not going to be the one that will, you know, really just stir up anger among his teammates to do, you know, even more than they're capable of. So there seems to be something a little lacking. It seems to be organizationally, there's just not something is a little lacking about that leads them to, according to Nick Nixon, it's now six games in a row that the opponent has scored first. But for you know, it was good to see though that the Kings finally answered the call of John Stevens to get into the tough areas to compete. You know, Stevens was saying that faceoffs and rebounds are compete indicators, and it was good to see the Kings finally respond. You know, when you see the Sharks game the other night, I mean, the Sharks, that was one of the few games where the opponent outmatched us for all 60 minutes. I mean, it looked close, but in reality, it was a blowout because the Sharks were surgically getting rebounds. I mean, it seemed like they were toying with the Kings to figure out how creatively they can bounce the rebound off Jonathan Quick and score. And, you know, the Curtis McDermott, you know, not paying attention and allowing, you know, Chris Tierney to just sneak up right behind into an open net, and Tyler Toffoli not even bothering to chase Barkley Goodrow. You know, when you see the replay, he was just coasting behind him and not even skating, and Goodrow found the open seam to score it into the goal. So, but when you compare that to the second period last night, where you know, they finally were able to execute and get traffic into the net, and Tanner Pearson getting into the crease to smash in that rebound. We're finally seeing signs of the team waking up. And not only that, to see that Adrian Kempe being the catalyst. You know, who knew? You know, who knew he had literally some fight in him. You know, to knew that he'd be the one to stand up for his teammates, that he'd be the one to try to split the defense and draw a penalty leading to the Kings' third goal. So if anybody was the difference last night, it was Kempe.
Before we jump into Kopitar's game as of late, and we're listing off in the topics that we're going to go with, you know, some discussion of the All-Stars who were announced after our last podcast. Sarah, I just a quick thought on your perception of the early starts and whether it is a matter of the Kings sort of easing into a game. I think that in the past we've seen that the Kings have, you know, tried to manage the game early, to control the game, to put Kopitar's line out there and get the puck in the offensive zone. Do you think there's an inherent issue with trying to establish that as opposed to sort of really driving to the net immediately? Or do you think it's something more than that?
You know, I'm kind of curious as if it's something more, because I know when they did it last season and they did it the season before, and we saw those same sort of like lazy starts where they'd start and they'd get the puck but not do anything with it. And, you know, as it became more clear that maybe, you know, Daryl Sutter wasn't going to be long for his position, that, you know, we thought maybe it was like kind of a sign of, you know, him losing the room and the team just not really responding to him anymore. But it's the same sort of things that we're seeing now. And, you know, part of it is just for those guys who have been playing under him for years of breaking that habit. TMI about me, but all of my school stuff, my degrees and everything are all in psychology. And so I take a lot of interest in, you know, sports psychology and, you know, whatever they want to call it to make it seem like the guys aren't going to see a therapist, mental skills coaching or, you know, grit training, or I don't know, they probably call it something absurd. But, you know, it makes me wonder a lot about what they're doing to kind of help the players get out of their heads, and, you know, what that looks like for the Kings, and how, you know, how do you lead these guys who don't think they need to talk to anyone about, like, visualizing the future, to, you know, get them to really revisualize what the start of a game looks like so that they're ready to go and not just, oops, we lost the puck and oops, we got scored on in the first minute again. You know, I have a lot of curiosity about that, which will never be answered unless the Kings, for some reason, like, hire me or give me an internship to sit around and watch them or something.
And if I can add something, you know, Phil Jackson, you know, when he was with the Lakers and the Bulls, you know, when he was coaching, he was seen as very different, you know, during his time, you know, and that's why they called him the Zen Master. But, you know, one thing he was famous for was having his players meditate and then, you know, really visualize, you know, the ball going into the basket, you know, visualize the victory, you know, what is it, visualize what you're going to do. So, you know, meditation, you know, and visualization, does play a role in success. And, you know, and Sarah does raise a good point.
It's really something we haven't talked about, I think, on the site, because we've, at least in the past, we're so, you know, we're filling more of a niche to look at numbers and statistics and say, well, here's why, you know, you should ignore a narrative that's, you know, really circling around this team. And between the Kings winning a bunch and everybody sort of catching up on that front, I think it's interesting, because we've seen this team so many times go through winter slumps, and we've seen them go into extended stretches where they're unable to score early, or they're unable to you know, lock down a certain part of their game. And at least the last couple of weeks, maybe, I don't know if it's solely a defensive lack of focus thing, we've seen a few games that were 0-0 for a while, or that were sort of just slogging early, maybe not the Kings going down 2-0 like the day against New York. So it's an interesting thing to discuss, and I think everybody's got different opinions as to why the Kings are doing that kind of early struggle thing. Robin, any final thoughts on that front, or maybe on sort of the winter lull as a whole?
I just will say that, you know, for whatever it's worth, I did think that they did deserve a better fate against the Ducks, because through 40 minutes, it was very even. And I dare say in the second period that they actually had the edge over the Ducks. So I thought it was like, I know they had kind of a third period, I don't want to say meltdown, but they kind of lost their way a little bit, and a couple of mistakes seeped into their game, which happens occasionally. But it's just kind of like, I've noticed it kind of less frequently since the break, the Pittsburgh game notwithstanding, although I think that had more to do with the guy in the net.
And I think the Kings were awful in the first period against Anaheim, but I think you're right. I think they sort of found their game, and you know, the second period, aside from a stretch in the middle where Anaheim was really taking over, maybe because of a power play, they hit a post or a crossbar, I think. At that point, when they gave up the game-winning goal to Kessler, they were actually in a stretch of decent defensive play after tying up the game, and they weren't generating a whole lot at the other end until after Kessler scored. But yeah, I think it's fair to argue that at that point. So I think let's go ahead and continue on. So since we talked about Kopitar just a little bit, and you did bring up Quick there, Robin, let's talk about the three All-Stars. So a couple days after our last Jewel cast, Drew Doughty, Jonathan Quick, Andre Kopitar all made the All-Star team. I don't think you can argue against any of their inclusions, even if maybe, you know, Kopitar and Quick have had their bits of trouble in the last couple weeks. They certainly earned their spots. So we could talk about the All-Star game, but I think we don't have much to say about the All-Star game that hasn't been said by a bunch of other people. But I'm curious about the outlook for those three down the stretch. Doughty, I think we know a lot of what we're getting from Drew Doughty. I don't off the top of my head know how the point production has been over the last few games, but let's talk about Quick first. So he is down to the last few weeks where the bye week was supposed to give him a little bit of a recharge because he'd started so many games going into the break. And so far he's sort of been inconsistent. His last couple games have been decent. Against the Ducks, he stopped 29 of 31. Against the Rangers, he recovered from a deflection and a rebound where he didn't get much help. So James, I'll start with you. What is your outlook for Quick for the rest of the season?
Well, like I said before, you know, my theory is that any backup needs to cover at least 25-30% of the starts. I made an error. I said 20% last time, but that's how much Kemper has been covering so far. Any backup needs to cover about 25-30% of the starts, because we've seen now quick in his 30s, you know, becoming an injury risk. And that is still the one thing I'm worried about. Now, I don't fault Quick for, you know, I don't fault Quick alone, you know, for the 6-game losing streak. If anything, Quick is single-handedly the one that kept the Kings in the game against Anaheim. If it weren't for him, the Ducks could have blown him out. He
sure.
kept the game competitive against the Sharks, and he definitely was solid against the Rangers after letting in a shaky deflected goal, the first goal that New York scored. So I'm not too worried, but yes, I do want to see Kemper take on more of the starts.
Sure. He got one game in the last month, I believe, and that was one that I don't think anybody expected him to start, which was against the Sharks. And Kemper was reasonably good, but gave up 3 goals on 32 shots. Got pulled early as the Kings tried to fight their way back into that game. Sarah, same question. What are you looking for from Quick the rest of the season?
So right now his numbers, at least save percentage-wise, are his best numbers since 2012, which is very nice to see. Other than that, he has been remarkably consistent in where he's at stats-wise in his career. So do I think he's going to come down from that, you know, 924 save percentage that he's got right now? Absolutely. I feel like we've seen some signs of it in those sort of shaky games and those goals that were like, who are you? What have you done with my goalie? I think as long as he can continue being Jonathan Quick, like, awesome. I think, you know, it'll be the same position the team is always in, which is he's going to have to steal a couple games. He can always keep you in it while the team decides if they want to score a goal or not. I would like to see more of Darcy Kemper. For the first time in a long time, I feel like we actually have a backup who we know we can rely on. So why not use him more? He's certainly – I wouldn't put that Sharks loss on him. That was the game where just nothing went right for the Kings. I don't think that should be a reflection on his play or anything. So, yeah, I'd like to see him more so that way when the Kings get the playoff spot that we all want them to have, that Jonathan Quick is actually in one piece and we're not making, like, little candle shrines to the health of his groin or whatever.
And we're actually at a decent spot in the schedule, even though the Kings just had their bye week from January 6th to 13th. They play a back-to-back tomorrow and Wednesday, and then they are off until the 30th, of course, because of the All-Star break. And Quick is going to have to travel out there and play in that game, but there is, you know, a chance for him to maybe get a little bit of fuel back. Robin, are you okay with Quick making the trek out to the All-Star game, or are you a little nervous?
Based on what I've seen of Quick in previous years, and Sarah actually mentioned this when she was out here in LA in December, you know how much Quick is a competitor. So part of me is a little bit kind of like almost side-eyeing Quick, like, okay, this is for fun. Screw the 100 frames. You'll do that if you actually manage to make the freaking playoffs. Like, chill out a little, dude.
There is no chilling with Jonathan Quick.
10 golden
and that, yeah. But if Quick cooled it for the All-Star game, it might affect his form the rest of the season. He might get used to taking it easy. So, we'll just keep that groin prayer circle going, I think. It's going to be a fun game, though. Mostly just because we get to see three kings on the ice at once. And I guess, James, when we're talking about Doughty, he hasn't been as explosive, at least from a points perspective, the last few games. But with Jake Muzzin out, he was keeping a pretty similar workload. I think Derek Forbert was getting the biggest chunk of the benefit from Muzzin being out in terms of his deployment. There aren't too many questions to ask about Doughty because we kind of know what we're going to get from him. So I'll just say, do you think the scoring is going to go up or down over the rest of the season, or are you expecting just his usual 10 goals or so and 30, 35 assists or so?
Well, Doughty's scoring will go up and down, in relation to the rest of the team scoring going up and down, and whether the rest of the team, gets into those tough areas like John Stevens has implored them to do. He's not going to be the one that's going to, make a fancy stick handling play and, drive all the way to the net and score like a Kempe or a Carter. That's not his job. Although he looks like he's about to go 1-on-5 against the other team, every game, but it never works because he's the defenseman. So, Doughty, I'm concerned long-term, although he's been as great as we usually expect him to be, I'm a little, my concern is whether he really is, worth, 13, 14 million, come 2 years. And, the way he has shown bad attitude in certain games, especially the Nashville one, if it weren't for that, the losing streak could have been, five instead of six. Five-game streak, we say, that happened. Six-game streak, that's when we start panicking and I come up with trade ideas, and debate Robin about that. I'm a little concerned about, Doughty's attitude. He hasn't, he could do more to show his leadership quality to the team. And by doing so, to me, that would make him a shoo-in for a $13, $14 million contract. But, his leadership has been lacking. It's the biggest riddle of the Kings. They are one of the few teams to have three all-stars. They have a top defenseman, a top goalie, and a top center in Kopitar. And to see them struggle this much, it's one of life's riddles in hockey to see a team with three all-stars struggling this much. And I guess that's why we're here, to debate these things.
I guess so. with Doughty, at least, I think if we're talking about getting him more help, one of the questions we got, at least on Twitter, was which defenseman is on our wish list. And I think before we talk about that, we have to ask more about whether we think it's necessary for the Kings to get another defenseman at this point. I linked today to an article from our sister site in Toronto, which mentioned the possibility of Doughty not returning to the Kings, and more from the perspective because he's one of the hundreds of free agents who has been linked with Toronto because he, apparently likes Toronto or something, because that's just what everybody assumes.
Well, that's because that's where all Canadians are from. I mean, half the population.
Yeah. They've all lived there. They've all played there. They all love playing there as opposed to anywhere else on Earth. What the first question is, are you, I guess we'll start with Sarah on this one. Do you think there's a need to acquire another defenseman, and are you doing this as a rental or as an insurance for, hey, maybe Doughty doesn't come back?
As much as some of us have joked on Twitter that Jack Johnson is going to get traded to the Kings, which, let me be perfectly clear, I don't want to happen. I know the Columbus trade is magic, but listen, we just gave them Jeff Zatkoff for nothing. So maybe that's the Columbus trade, and we don't have to deal with all the hot takes about Jack Johnson actually being terrible. I'd rather see them go after a forward. I'd rather just let the chips fall where they are with defensemen. And this team's biggest problem is scoring, and it's always been the Kings' biggest problem over the past several years. If they're gonna blow the bank and give up assets for something, because it doesn't necessarily look like any of the guys down in Ontario are going to be a solution for, a scoring forward. I'd rather see them go after that and then deal with the Doughty issue sometime later.
Robin, sort of the same question. If you're looking at a defenseman or a forward, do you have a choice? And are you looking for a long-term solution or, as the Kings usually do, finding someone who can help out this year and revisiting over the offseason?
My answer is going to be really similar to Sarah's. Like, their biggest problem has always been scoring. And I look at their bottom six and I compare it to, once again, I have to compare it to Tampa's bottom six, because even with Hedman out, they're still able to score, like, a million goals. So thinking, their defense isn't that bad. As much as I dislike forward, I think he's fine. Is he suited for a top four role? No. Can they live with him as top four role? In limited minutes where he's under 20 minutes, yes. But they need, especially because they've been playing most of the season. I mean, Jeff Carter played five games and, like, two shifts before Jeff Petrie tried to cut his foot off. Since they've been playing without second-line center, the fact that they are still in the playoff, I think, is pretty decent. However, I would like some extra help because, aside from Trevor Lewis, what is the bottom six doing? They're not doing anything to help chip in on scoring, as usual.
James, are you taking Jeff Carter as your trade deadline acquisition, or are you looking deeper?
Before I answer that, Robin, what do you mean Derek Forbert? Like, he's the one that almost played the biggest role in almost killing that 5-minute penalty after Dustin Brown hit Justin Schultz. So Robin, I think you continue to underestimate Forbert's role on the team. But
Don't worry. We're talking about Forbert next, I promise. We're leaving. I've been waiting for this for a while. So let's just round this one out.
Okay, well, I agree with Robin and Sarah. The Kings' longest-term problem has been scoring, and they have traded for forwards Jeff Carter in 2012, Marian Gaborik in 2014, both from Columbus. Both years they won the cup. And that's happening again. Right now, on NBCSN, I think it was Brian Hayward, and he was very gracious the other night. He wasn't as much of a homer. He had some gracious things to say about the Kings. And one thing he was saying was the Kings, once you get beyond the first line, it's a big drop-off. Kopitar and Brown have been leading the team. But after that, who's next? You get intermittent production from Kempe, intermittent from Gaborik, and Trevor Lewis has stepped it up as well. And there's I mentioned Toffoli, but those guys are intermittent. And once you have Kopitar and Brown dropping off, with Brown, and then also Gaborik, both Brown and Gaborik only had one assist the last five games. Then the Kings' weaknesses start to be a little more glaring. So, and the defense is mostly solid. So if a trade is going to happen, then once again we're going to be looking at repeating history and seeing, what kind of forward we could trade for. And I have some ideas. I have some ideas for you, Robin.
Let me just add some. I'm going to cheat and say I heard this on the Thanks Bud podcast because I didn't actually look it up myself. But they mentioned that, I think it was Chanel, I forgot who saw it, but one of them saw that Gabe Vilardi, he got traded to a different team in the OHL, and his coach was saying we would never have traded him if we thought he was going to be back next year. So the future, I guess, is bright for LA, but I'm curious to see, because, you know, under Gene Lombardi, they did a good job in getting their two cups, but actually they kind of also emptied their cupboards, and they kept getting more of these bottom six type players. Role players are great, have their roles, I guess, with the team, but I feel like we have nine role players instead of, like, you know, nine actual really good scoring forwards. So I guess that kind of factors into what are they going to do in terms of a trade, because you don't want to give up a Gabe Vilardi type, but they don't really have anybody else that they can trade for help right now.
Yeah, and there's always the hope that, you know, it's an HF4th trade proposal, right? You're like, okay, let's just throw in Kevin Gravel and Johnny Brodzinski, and then we'll get top six winger. Like, that, it's there are too many contenders, especially in this league, because of the way the point system is drawn out. And every team, you know, there are 25 teams that think they can make the playoffs. You're never going to land anybody with that kind of package. So I'm intrigued that everybody is so sort of comfortable with the way the defense is laid out. I expected more disagreement, but then again, this team is first in the league in goals against still at this point. Instead of talking about actually go ahead, James.
Well, Eric, I mean, the defense is pretty solid. I think right now the best candidate for trade among the defensemen is Alec Martinez. And I hate to say this. I know everyone loves Alec Martinez, but with Jake Muzzin, you know, quietly producing just under the level of Drew Doughty, with the rise of, you know, the Gravels and the Ledoux, Alec Martinez, he's above 30, and we've already seen, you know, everything that he's capable of doing. You know, once you take away his overtime heroics, Martinez is pretty average at best. I think a trade of him to see if we can get an upgrade for forward. And also remember, the Kings are very much in win-now mode. You know, it's this year and next year. And next year is going to come at a price, because next year we will have to keep Drew Doughty, and trading him is out of the question, and risk, you know, him walking on us. So, you know, if I hate to say this, but if we need to dangle a Toffoli or a Pearson or even Kempe, who I know Kempe represents the future of the team, and people see him as the next Jeff Carter almost with his skill level. But, you know, if we can dangle one of those players to see if we can get a bona fide star in return, even if it's a rental, the Kings are going to have to consider that, because their window is this year and next year, and that's it. Who knows what's going to happen to Doughty?
Yeah, but
Okay, Robin, go first.
Right now, because I will fight you.
Oh, boy. Tension in the air. Okay, Robin.
Apple gets on a plane.
The problem with trading Kempe or Toffoli or Pearson is creating a giant hole for yourself, because, I mean, how long have we been saying, oh my God, they need a left winger? I think from the time that Dean Lombardi took over in 2006 until they finally won the cup in 2012, actually until 2014, they were still saying they have a giant hole on left wing. Like, when are they ever going to find a left winger? And then it's just kind of like, you know, gnawing off your foot or something. I don't know. I don't have a good analogy, but it's another hole in your feet or something like that. It's just not advisable.
Robin, for example, you know, if, you know, Vegas wants young players because, you know, it's their first year and they want to build long term, I think they'd be interested in a young player like a Kempe or a Toffoli or a Pearson in exchange for James Neal, who is a proven quantity.
Ew.
I think I would much rather have a proven quantity than an intermittent semi-star, because, you know, let's face it, you know, we're in danger of losing, missing out on the playoffs yet again, despite having three all-stars. And, you know, the time for action is now. You know, we need to do whatever it takes to get back into cup contention. Otherwise, we're wasting, you know, the talent that Kopitar and Doughty and Quick are giving us.
No, I
I'm just not buying.
Oh, sorry, Eric, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm not buying Neil as a significant upgrade from Toffoli. Maybe, you know, you could sell me on Pearson potentially, but we're talking about Toffoli, who's, I think, leading the team in goals this year. He's scored 30 before. I know Neil has had one or two really big years in the past, and this year he's scoring like everybody else in Vegas, but I don't buy him as, you know, even if it's a win now move. I just don't think that with the deal that Toffoli is on, I don't even remember how long he signed up for. I think he might have gotten a bridge deal, but he's on such an appealing deal right now that I don't think it's worth it to get rid of him, at least for the next couple of years. I don't know. I think Sarah had a very visible reaction to, or a very audible reaction to the idea. So I just want to hear what your thoughts are.
No, it's terrible. Some of that is, first off, I have my own biased feelings about James Neal, who I don't think Vegas would get rid of him anyway, because Vegas thinks they're going to go for it. But it is very much cutting off your nose to spite your face kind of thing. And some of it is kind of my perspective on, I'd much rather the team be in good shape for the long term than to blow it all now and, you know, for maybe nothing. Even looking at like the list of guys who are available, who will be possibly rentals, whose teams are not going to hang on to them, like John Tavares isn't getting traded at the deadline. You know, most of these teams are still contenders. You know, the names that jump out are like Mark Stone on the Senators, who you might be able to fool the Senators into taking like Andy Andreoff for him. Who knows? You know, Evander Kane, who I don't care how great of a player he is, I don't want him on my team. You know, that's kind of it. Like most of the other teams of point producing forwards who are going to be on the rental market, they're all, you know, playoff contenders. So I don't know who you're going to pry out of a team for getting rid of one of our reliable star players for a rental. Like, were I a GM, I wouldn't do it, which is probably why I'll never be a hockey GM.
Well, the thing is,
yeah, go ahead, James.
Well, the thing is, Sarah, you've said it. There's just something organizationally lacking from a, it must be like a business cultural perspective that's been missing since the Regeers and Stoles and Richards have left. And I know earlier I was sour on a guy like Evander Kane, but I think somebody like him would be able to really jolt this team out of its slumber. And, you know, if we can bring him in his edginess, you know, I think that's an upgrade over, you know, somebody like Toffoli and Pearson, who, yes, they have a lot of hockey left in them, but I mean, they're semi-stars at best. And you know, if we have to, you know, we only have two more years, and I can't, you know, as a fan, I just can't bear to see them miss out on the playoffs, you know, three out of the last 4 years, you know, with the Lucic year, you know, not even really counting, because they coasted their way into the playoffs that year. So like, something is really lacking, and, you know, we can't just, you know, sit and twiddle our thumbs. You know, we need to take action to jolt this team back into contention.
Okay, but Evander Kane is a garbage human being, so we don't really want him on our team anyway. And I'm looking at his stats, and his career high in goals is 30. He's only done that once. Beyond that, he got close last year. He got to 28 games. But he's also never had a fully healthy season. So you're going to take on $5.2 million for a rental, essentially, because he's a UFA at the end of the – I guess two more years, because he's a UFA in 2018-19. So, I mean, if he can be healthy and he can be possibly productive, but those are big ifs to give up for Toffoli and Pearson. And I know Pearson doesn't have all the goals, and the goals are the sexy thing, but Pearson is on pace for his highest, for his career high in points. So he's still doing a lot, even if he's not scoring goals.
James, the one thing I agree with you on, I think, if we're looking back at the Martinez thing, is I think there that Martinez, more than a Toffoli or a Pearson, is somebody whose reputation probably exceeds his performance. I think Martinez proved that he can be a top four defenseman over the last couple of years. I think he struggled in a lot of ways this season, but I agree with you that if there's somebody who they'll get decent value for, it's him. I'm just concerned about trading a defenseman and not getting someone that can fill a top four role back, especially the way that the Kings looked without Muzzin, which I guess leads me to the inevitable Derek Forbert debate, because Forbert played 26 minutes against New York yesterday. I don't know how that compares to highest totals in the past. I'm sure he's exceeded that at least once before, given that he's played with Drew Doughty in a lot of games. But that was, I think, his most in probably quite some time. And he got a lot of credit for the way he played, even though things went really south on that first goal. And I don't know who to start with, James or Robin, because I know you both have opinions on him. So I guess, Robin, we'll let you start, just in the sense of if the Kings have another injury on defense, or even going forward, how are you feeling about Derek Forbert just as the number four guy? Let's start there.
My problem with Derek Forbert is we all bemoan everybody else as being like super inconsistent, but he swings more wildly from game to game than anybody else. And I don't care what Doughty says. I've been watching Forbert this season, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? My issue with Forbert as a number four defenseman is that it's so much harder to protect him. I mean, he got outskated by Grabner. Grabner's 40 years old. Derek is 24. I mean, Grabner's not at his peak anymore. So when you're getting outskated by somebody like Marian Gaborik or Grabner, like, his lack of foot speed just is so concerning to me.
Okay, James, know if you either want to counter that point or just go on what your take on him is.
Well, I mean, you know, lots of players lack foot speed, but it hasn't stopped the Kings from using them. I mean, you know, McDermott lacks foot speed, but the Kings use him. You know, and he was doing, I mean, yes, he really struggled, you know, against the Sharks. And
he was flat out awful against the Sharks. I'm very sorry to McDermott, but he's another one of those bottom six guys. He's your seventh ace defenseman, and I just didn't see the appeal. I mean, I guess he's gritty, but when you've got guys who are constantly, you know, having to chase down pucks and they can't keep up, like, I mean, the forward thing yesterday, that could have been an ice thing, but instead, Grabner was able to negate it because he's so much faster than forward. I mean, and I see that a lot with our defense, and that's a thing that concerns me. And the thing that, you know, Martinez, he's also not the fastest guy on the team, but he plays his angles better than almost anybody on the team because he knows what works for him. And that's obviously coming from years after being the 6'7" defenseman. But it's just when they're slow, especially the way that they're playing this year, it just kind of is like, come on. Do something, and I'm speaking broadly, not just a forward.
Yeah, I think we actually had James drop off, and it would be a really fun continuing bit for this podcast to promise that we're going to have a full forward debate and then keep switching subjects or cutting it off. But Yeah, I think he's you know, we're clearly all at least comfortable enough with him having you know, 20 minutes a game that we're not looking to sell the farm for a fourth defenseman. But it's going to be an interesting thing to watch down the stretch. Sarah, let's talk about the other defenseman in the picture that we haven't looked at yet with Jake Muzzin. He comes back a couple games ago. He scores a power play goal yesterday. I don't think anyone argues with Muzzin being sort of the number two guy on this team, but how essential do you think he is to the Kings' performance?
I mean, I think you can just look to see how disjointed the defense was for those handful of games that he missed. You know, he's one of the guys that people always, you know, whenever you talk about trading a defenseman, it's always him or Alec Martinez's names who come up. But, I mean, I don't want to trade either of them. But if I had to, like, pick, if you were, like, forcing me, I'd say you can't get rid of Jake Muzzin. He always is going to have his, like, kind of gypsy moments where you're like, where are you going? Like, why did you just make that choice? But he puts together such a, like, consistently, like, quiet but good performance that I don't, you know, I think that he definitely gets very underrated, especially by a lot of the fan base who just wants to see him go do something else. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, he might not be playing on the top pairing, but he's definitely, you know, holding it down and, you know, where he's at, and I think should not go anywhere.
Yeah, and I think that's, at this point, thankfully, something that I don't think anybody is bringing up, which, you know, we had to deal with a few years of that. Let's actually, before we move on, let's talk about Pearson and Toffoli just from a this year perspective, because it's probably not fair for me to be so, you know, resistant to the idea of trading them when I mentioned in the podcast description that that was one of the bad things we were going to talk about. And Toffoli, although he does have 18 goals this year, has been a little off the map in his last few games. I mean, granted, a number of Kings were, but Toffoli hasn't had a point in the last five games. Pearson did manage to make a nice little deflection for a power play goal yesterday, but those two, especially for a team that was so reliant on their first line at times this year, they have been pretty inconsistent. Robin, do you expect more of that with them when they don't have Jeff Carter in the lineup, or do you think it's just sort of a normal lull that, you know, can happen with a young player?
I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I was watching them when they were in Manchester, and they were lighting it up with Lyndon Bay as their center. Like, granted, you know, fan favorite Lyndon Bay, they were in the AHL. Sorry, I had to get my shot at Lyndon Bay. Sorry, Lyndon Bay, if you're listening to this podcast, or anybody associated with Lyndon Bay. Anyway,
listen, he is an Olympian. He's a Canadian Olympian, Lyndon Bay. Thank you very much.
But anyway, I mean, my feeling with them is mostly that they just need a competent center. So, Lyndon, like, in the AHL, you can get away with somebody like Lyndon Bay, so who just needs to go to the net and dish them the puck. That's all they really need. But in the NHL, obviously, it's a little bit harder, so they need somebody who's a little bit more skilled and a little bit more, I mean, as much as I love Kempe and I like what he's kind of doing for them, I like the idea because it's a really fast line, and so they can get to the net using their speed. But the problem is Kempe doesn't quite know how to create space for himself the way Jeff Carter does. And Kempe is still very much a rookie. So it's not really his fault that he's not Connor McDavid or whatever, somebody who's lights out amazing skills. Kempe is going to learn to be a Jeff Carter, but he's not year, yes. But they need Jeff Carter, and Jeff Carter was so perfect because at that stage of his career that he got paired up with them, the reason why it worked so well is because Carter's game just it's more of a north-south game, and Kempe is that way too, but it's just he doesn't quite know how to utilize his linemate the way Carter does.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern with Toffoli in particular, I agree with you on Kempe. I think it's sort of a, you know, one of those things where he's figuring out the league. I can't put any sort of blame on him if he's not, you know, lifting teammates to new heights or whatever. But the interesting thing with Toffoli is he's shown indications the last few years that he can sort of do that. He can take players that he's playing with, and even if they don't see their point totals go up because Toffoli's not a distributor, that he's his lines, you know, they carry possession and they manage to, you know, turn offense or defensive play into offensive play. And Toffoli this year, he's, aside from Marion Gaborik and Adrian Kempe, had more offensive zone starts than any other player. He's managed to turn it into goals at a decent rate this year, but the possession really hasn't been there. And granted, that's happened for a lot of Kings, and maybe Toffoli is one player who's seen a bit of a drop under Stevens. But it's you know, even if the finishing is there, some of those other aspects of the game have been a little off this year. Sarah, you have any thoughts on the Toffoli Pearson duo? Do you think it's time for them to start seeing other players?
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, I think part of it is like both of them have always been streaky, but it's usually balanced out in that one is scoring when the other isn't. And this year it seems like they've both just gone quiet at the same time. I do think like what Robin was saying is that playing with Adrian Kempe, who is not a natural center, who just kind of got plunked there and has better than I expected him to, it's not playing with Jeff Carter. And, you know, they've tried, you know, they put Trevor Lewis in there for like a hot minute. They put Nick Thor there for a couple minutes. And none of it really worked as well as Kempe did, but it's still not Jeff Carter. And I think that, you know, adjusting to playing with someone who has a different playing style, who has a different, you know, set of gears on him, and who's really new to learning the center role has probably affected their play. I saw, you know, the last game they split them up for like a period maybe, and then we're like, no, never mind. You know, it would be interesting to see if, you know, you want to rebalance the lines and, you know, see if you can get one of them going by putting them somewhere else. It's worth a shot, but I think it's just bad luck that they've both gone kind of quiet at the same time. And how do you get them out of that? I mean, it goes back to what we said at the top of the show of, you know, how do you get any of these players out of their heads, to be determined.
And for whatever it's worth, Toffoli and Pearson together have actually been better than either Toffoli without Pearson or Pearson without Toffoli. From a shots perspective, I at least according to what I'm seeing on hockeyviz.com, which is, of course, the visual website from Micah Blake McCurdy that is really great and you should use it all the time like I do, that they've been that Toffoli hasn't found any forward better than Pearson, at least for drawing offense. And maybe it's because Stevens is giving them a lot of time to work with in the offensive zone. But Toffoli and Pearson, the defense maybe hasn't been as well structured as it's been in the past. And maybe that happens when the only coach you've ever played under is Daryl Sutter. So we've got about 15-20 minutes left. And we've been ignoring Trevor Lewis, so I'm going to make sure we talk about Trevor Lewis before we sort of wind down today. Robin, thoughts about Trevor Lewis?
I love him. Okay, it goes
perfect.
Beyond that. No.
Done. Next.
love Trevor Lewis. That shot last, that moment last night was very much peak Trevor Lewis. So Trevor Lewis is on a breakaway. He is all alone. He has all the time in the world to pick his spot. And I like that Jim Fox tried really hard to give. Lewis just kind of didn't know what to do. And I was like, oh, this is so peak Trevor Lewis.
And Lewis this year, I think, has been playing more. It seems like they're still using him as a guy who is sort of out there protecting leads more than someone who they're looking to provide offense when they're down, which makes it maybe more impressive that Lewis has managed to hit 12 goals already this season. And he's, you know, in a bottom six that's really, really struggled to find guys who can play possession hockey. Lewis is still about 50%, which at least by team standards is pretty much right on the average. So, and he's doing that while still getting a whole bunch of defensive zone time. Sarah, do you expect this to continue?
I want it to. I really do. I think Trevor Lewis is such a fan favorite, and I know that I've certainly said some things about how, like, you could probably replace him with someone younger and cheaper, and then had to, like, change my name and address so that, like, Kings fans didn't find me and, like, have words with me. But if there was anything I was not expecting from this season, it's, like, the Trevor Lewis, like, revelation of, oh, wait, he can actually play, like, not defensive things. He can actually score more goals. He could score 20 goals this year, which is absurd and not what I thought
absurd
Trevor Lewis would ever do. Is it sustainable? Who knows at this point? I've thrown everything that I've thought about Trevor Lewis out the window because John Stevens has, like, unleashed something in him, and I'm here for it.
Yay, Trevor Lewis!
And he's done the one thing that he could have done to make me not say that we're almost at the point where Nick Shore could suitably replace him, which is he started scoring. So all credit to Trevor Lewis for doing that. Nick Shore, buddy, I know you're going to have that kind of season one of these years. It's going to happen. Or maybe
<I'm> sorry.
Not.
Listen, I believe. I'm with you, Eric. I believe.
Oh, Shore boy. I do. You know, yeah. As much crap as you've given Nick Shore over the years, I do like him. I think he is a very good. Well, okay, maybe not very good, but I think he's a suitable for Kings hockey fourth line center. I think he does really good in his defensive role. I mean, he's always been that way. His scoring in the AHL, I'm sorry, was honestly a fluke, and I was like, don't buy in, Kings, don't buy in. But they were always, like, hot on Nick Shore, like, since he was playing in college.
And yeah, it's like it's weird. Shore has been the one guy on this team that seemingly has continued to get the same results he got under Daryl Sutter. He's still clicking at about 54% Corsi 4, which on this team is really, really high. And he's, you know, -3 this season. He's in the same position of the shots are coming and the goals really aren't. And maybe it's maybe a shot location. He doesn't strike me as somebody who is going to be a net front chipping in easy goals. But he's, you know, the penalty killing is still there. The abilities on defense are still there. But he's been the one guy who kept sort of the same style and the same abilities that he'd had in the past. So let's. Now that we've talked about the other centers, go ahead.
Oh, I forgot who said it, and I'm sure we've brought this up many times in the past, but somebody, I think it was either Mayer or Dennis Bernstein of the fourth period, somebody said that he's a shoot-first player, and that's kind of the root of his offensive woes. Even if he has an empty net, he would rather defer to somebody else on the team given the opportunity. And that's kind of been how he's always been.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think at least from the perspective of, you know, the Kings like their shot mentality, then or at least used to like their shot mentality, then maybe it's not a bad thing if you have him out there with guys like Clifford and Lewis, who are going to be in more advantageous spots. So, you know, it hasn't really panned out for sure the way he'd hope this year, but he's at least, you know, the process is good. We'll wrap up in a couple minutes, but first we'll talk briefly about the rest of the Pacific Division. So the reason the Kings are sort of mired in this spot is because Calgary has really kicked it up as of late, which is annoying because I thought the Flames might have one season where they were doing the Kings thing of leading the league in possession or leading the West in possession and having bad luck, but I guess it just wasn't meant to be. Besides the Flames, the Vegas is Vegas, and the Sharks are, I guess, the Sharks. So, I guess, Sarah, what are you expecting for the Pacific from the rest of the season? Do you think the Flames are going to stay ahead, and are you more worried about the Sharks or another team?
The Flames just drive me up a wall. Like, they're bad, but they're good, but they're also not good, but also Mike Smith is their goalie, who's bad, but also not bad. Like, they won, like, 7 games in a row or whatever, like, secretly when no one was paying attention. I'd actually be worried about the Ducks because they're right behind us. The Kings have 55 points. The Ducks have 53. The Ducks spent the first half of the season with, like, basically an AHL team playing because everyone was hurt, and now everyone's back again, and they're annoying as ever. Those wild card spots are going to be I'm curious to see what happens because the Central, except for Chicago, which is terrible this year, those last two wild card spots usually go to Central teams, which are, you know, whose hope, like, I'm so confused by what's happening this year, and I want it to end. Vegas has ruined everything. Vegas has just, like, blown every idea anyone had about this season and what the playoff picture would look like out of the water.
Sarah, I need you to explain what's happening with the Avalanche. When did Jonathan Bernier turn into a player? 9:58 days for their 10-game win streak. Like,
magic! I'm so confused.
In the middle of all this confusion, I'm just struck by how different Anaheim is from LA. The Ducks, I think, are... I mentioned earlier in the cast that of the top 18 teams or something in leading games percentage, like the percentage of time they spend in the lead, I think that's 16 of them that are playoff teams. And the Ducks are like fourth in the league in that. And they just cannot hold on to a third period lead to save their lives. We've seen every time the Kings have played them, even the ones they didn't win, they threw a scare into them, including one game where it was 3-0 and done and dusted for all intents and purposes. And we're seeing now what, we're learning whether it's better to be trailing most of a game and make a late comeback or leading most of a game and just be unable to hold it. And it's not really working for either the Kings or the Ducks, shockingly. But yeah, as you said, Sarah, they're finally healthy for the most part. Quick Calgary update. They are tied with the Sabres after 2 periods. So maybe they are bad. I don't know. we already know they're going to score 3 in the third and win, but for now they're tied.
Yeah, speaking of Sabre, they still have not been to Buffalo this season. And I don't think they've won in Buffalo since the
They have not. So, fun fact, I'm actually going on a little bit of a Kings East Coast road trip in February. I'll be at the game in Raleigh, the game in Pittsburgh, and I'm going to Buffalo. So maybe they just need me to win. I mean, presuming some sort of, like, apocalyptic blizzard doesn't come through and I don't get stuck, like, at my parents' house in Pittsburgh, and that would be sad. But I will be there. So maybe the Kings have won both of the games that I saw, all three of the games that I saw from them this season. So maybe it's me. We'll find out.
I'm gonna need you to bring a sword to Buffalo and snap it over your leg in front of the arena. I feel like we need more.
Absolutely, I will. I will, like, wrangle some random person walking past to, like, video this for me.
All right, Sarah, we're counting on you to be our good luck charm.
I'm gonna try.
No pressure.
It's the little things. It's the little things that help this team win. So we'll see how things go. They've got Calgary and Vancouver tomorrow and Wednesday, I'm sure on our next podcast we'll get a chance to talk about how those games go. But if they manage to pull off a couple wins, then suddenly the Kings are in a decent spot again in a very, very crowded Western race. Really, we'll end on a high note with the note that Jeff Carter is alive and has been spotted skating in El Segundo. We've seen the timetable sort of it sort of always seems like he's a month away, but Jim Fox did mention that they were expecting him to be about a month or so out. Thank you for Jim Fox for being more active on Twitter lately and for giving us these little nuggets. So if Carter comes back around the trade deadline, Robin, and real quick, what does that do for the Kings beyond the obvious? They'll score more.
Kind of hard to say because it's going to take a while for him to get reacclimated to an NHL game schedule. So it'll all kind of depend on how he how quickly he adjusts. But there was somebody else who was out early in the season. It was Marian Gaborik. And remember when in November when the Kings had their little skid after winning eight in a row, Marian Gaborik came back, and then all of a sudden the Kings looked like a different team. So it usually happens that when they get somebody back, they're kind of like, oh, we have a really good player, but I think we can stop playing like crap now.
Yeah, Sarah, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gives them flexibility because I was, you know, the game where they moved Adrian Kempe up to wing, I thought he looked good there, but it really revealed how bad their center depth is. And, you know, if they bring Jeff Carter comes back in and maybe they put him on the third line or something to kind of ease him back in instead of just dumping him in and they're like, okay, here's your 18 minutes a night, you know, having him be able to come back in gives him a lot more options. And, you know, even if he does come back into that second line center role, then you can put Kempe on wing, you can put Kempe on the third line. You can move people around a lot more and not have to worry about creating another big hole in the lineup. So presuming that he's still the same, you know, this injury isn't more traumatic than we've been led to believe. If he comes back like he didn't miss a step, I think it gives them a lot more options going forward.
Yeah, and I think there have been, you know, in the midst of all the losing, it's been tough to gauge what this team is going to be capable of with a Jeff Carter, and more specifically, what they're capable of if they aren't trailing in most of their games. I think it'll be a boost for them. I think the Kings are capable of more, and I think we've seen that the Kings are capable of more than they showed the last couple weeks, but you just got to hope that they can stay in the race long enough for Carter to come back, because at this point, I think it's a team that still could make the playoffs without Carter, but I think it's a tough slog if Quick declines at all, or if any of the, if Kopitar or Brown cools off, it's pretty precarious. So we will, Robin, go ahead.
Fight Dowdy again or try to kill somebody on the Kings. It seems that the only time that they show up to a Calgary game is when Matthew Tkachuk is trying to commit murder on the ice.
The thinnest of ice we find ourselves on. Oh, boy. Well, on that note, I think we are going to sign off. So we've got the All-Star break coming up. We've got Jeff Carter's hopefully imminent return. Maybe he'll surprise us and come back sooner like Gavrik did. But more than anything, there are some important games coming up. And aside from Carter, still a mostly healthy team. So fingers crossed, and we'll see how this upcoming road trip goes. They've got, in addition to those Calgary and Vancouver games, they get to play Pittsburgh. They, have another game against Edmonton. And then there's the first home game back is against Nashville. So stay tuned. And for now, thanks for joining us. Thanks, Sarah and Robin and James. And we will chat soon. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.